Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the swinging voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Swinging, yes. Indeed. Yes, good morning, Matthew. How are you?
Good morning. Good, good, thanks. Now listen, what you get up to in your own time is absolutely fine. We do not judge here on the Goalkeepers Union podcast. We do not cast aspersions, okay?
Oh, thank you. No, that's appreciated. It's very much a circle of trust, I feel, me and you here. And again, what we talk about here stays between us.
Good, good. You're off to a swingers club today.
I am indeed. Quite a prestigious one as well. The one that they all want to go to.
Please.
Yeah, I'm playing at Celtic Manor.
Lovely.
Today, which should be lots of fun, which does mean that we are a little bit limited for time. However, we have got plenty to talk about and no doubt we'll have more than enough time to crack on through it and pick the bones out of all the goalkeeping goodness this weekend.
Indeed, because you're also, I mean, we were sport for choice, weren't we? In terms of what you were going to be.
I suggested buzzing and you've just completely ignored me and gone with swinging, much to my surprise and disappointment. But I was going to suggest buzzing because, of course, the Glorions are back in the Premier League, which as much as we try to stay neutral on this show, of course, but I do have a bit of an affinity with good old Watford, of course, and Brentford too, although they have now made the playoffs as well, which is good. But for Watford, delighted that they're back in the Premier League.
You should also be buzzing for another ridiculous reason. You are nearly the smug voice of goalkeeping.
Go on.
Because we have results.
Oh, really? And were they in my favour?
Absolutely. We're just going to quickly brush past it. It's just ridiculous.
How many people voted, by the way? Was it more than 10?
Oh, thousands.
Really?
Thousands. Hundreds.
We were in the hundreds?
In the tens, yeah.
Okay, in the tens. Right, fine. That's enough. That's enough. So go on. What was the result? Do we remind people as to what this was?
Well, we'll do it quickly, of course. I'm sure everybody is already aware. Most people listen to the same podcast week in, week out. So, yes, it was just to determine whether Peter Schmeichel did, in fact, win a header in the Bayern box for Manchester United in the 1999 Champions League final. Now, I say for Manchester United, I mean specifically for the first goal because he didn't come up for the second goal. And also, specifically, was it similar to the header that Matty Ryan nodded on for Arsenal to equalise against Fulham?
Just read the results, yeah.
The results, yes, 57.9%.
Well, there you go.
No, 59.2%.
That doesn't make any sense. I mean, I'm not great at maths, but that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, 42.1%. So
I guess there's one thing left to do on this.
Go on.
I think you know what it is.
Well, we're going to brush straight on.
No. Because look,
I don't want to criticise the listeners, but you're all bonkers.
There were two ways in which this could have gone, and I made it very well known as to what would happen had I been wrong in this situation. But given that you are now officially, factually wrong, there's only one thing left to do.
Indeed. So recently on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, we spoke to Lawrence Vigouroux, didn't we? Really good chat.
I've learned so much about you as a human being just then. Unbelievable.
We spoke to Viggs, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Really good chat. Okay. He started his career at Tottenham, was at Brentford for a bit, was at Tottenham and then Liverpool. But we spoke to him about his time at Tottenham and he spoke about the goalkeepers that he worked with specifically for a period. A quick snippet.
I think we should look just quickly. One of the things I love about Viggs, real humble guy, knows when to apologise. That's one of the things I love. So let's listen to that snippet.
Yeah, so Brad Friedel, Hugo Lloris, Gomez, Cudicini, that's four top quality goalkeepers, you know. So Jordan Archer, of course, who was a year above. Luke McGee was a year below or a couple of years below. So we had a really good goalkeeping unit and, you know, just been able to learn from, you know, each and every one, you know, pick bits out of everyone. And try and implement them into your own game. I think that was really good, you know, just to learn, just cut, you know, especially, you know, training with the outfield players as well, you know, seeing how dedicated they were, what they ate, you know, it was really eye-opening for me.
Just to touch on, I mean, you mentioned a few names there, but certainly the four that you mentioned in particular, was there anything, I mean, I'm guessing you train with them quite regularly, was there anything that you remembered specifically from any of them? And I asked this on the back of, I worked with Brad Friedel for a year at Blackburn, and one of the biggest things for me with him was, you know, they use the word consistency to describe him, and I'd use the same word because I just remember him turning up every day for training. He was never that low, never that high, always somewhere in the middle, always, you know, in a good place, win, lose or draw, just very consistent as a character as well as a goalkeeper. Was there anything that you remember from the others that has maybe stuck with you?
Yeah, just that you can't score past Gomez.
Is he that good? Because it's funny. I mean, I know obviously more via Watford links and what some of the. In fact, we had him, or I had him on a Zoom call that we did with some of the kids not that long ago, and he was fantastic. The fact that he even came on, I was delighted. Really, really nice gesture of him to come on. But yeah, people at Watford telling me that he's just ridiculous, like in terms of his a lot of his natural attributes as well, because certainly I'm guessing when you work with him, he's probably quite raw as a goalkeeper technically.
Yeah.
A lot of the natural attributes.
Oh, he was top drawer, to be fair. Like, we used to call him the octopus. It would be like he's got eight arms. Couldn't score past him. He was honestly brilliant. Hugo was very, very quick. Like, I had never seen, I thought I was quick, you know, like quite sharp. But then I watched him and he was just like, he's working in 200 miles an hour. But it was, and then you had, of course, like you said, you had Brad Friedel, who was very, very consistent. He was, you know, always the same. And then Cudicini was just so technical. Like, it was just, everything was just pristine with everything he'd done. You know, everyone's quite unorthodox. He is, if you want a textbook of how to be a goalkeeper, by the book, Carlo Cudicini was, honestly, because as I was quite unorthodox, I still am, I think. But in terms of pickup, you know, the serve that dips just in front of you, I used to struggle quite a bit with them. You know, like just holding them and keeping them in. But I just watched Cudicini, and it would just be like a volley for him. It'd be easy, and it was just like stuff like that. You know, nothing ever spilled. It was just perfect. And it, for me, for someone coming from my background, which was, you know, not playing with elite players every day, to watch that, it was just, you know, it was a blessing. So, you know, yeah, I was really happy to be part of that group.
So there we go. That was Lawrence Vigory. You can catch that now on patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Interesting, the stuff on Aurelio Gomez, wasn't it? Not the first time a goalkeeper we've interviewed has said one of the best goalkeepers we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's funny. You get certain players, I always felt like that with outfield players, the amount of people that would say it about a Gareth Barry or someone like that, that of course everybody rated, but it seemed like players that played with him rated him more than maybe the general public. And it does feel like that with Gomez. Now, look, I know that you ask any Watford fan, they absolutely adore him. He was fantastic for the club, etc., etc. But you wouldn't have him amongst the greats necessarily. But the amount that we've spoke to now that say the exact thing, that the guy is just unbeatable. And sounds like he's a really good character as well. So certainly he's one that we'd love to get on the podcast at some point.
And a good chat with Viggs too.
Really good. No, look, Viggs is someone I've got to know more and more. And his journey for me is a fascinating one. And I love the fact now that he is at a point in his career where I feel like he is about to kick on in a big way. Wouldn't surprise me if we see him climbing a league or two very, very quickly as well, just because he's got all the attributes. And now I feel like he's got the mentality as well to take it to the next level.
Yep. Lawrence Vigory, Leighton Orient number one as things stand, over on Patreon, patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Plenty coming up, Richard, and you've got to get a move on. So on with the show.
Let's do it.
We're going to start with the Carabao Cup final. Manchester City 1, Tottenham 0. Hugo Lloris with a series of saves throughout the game in this one. 21 shots Manchester City had, 4 of those on target. An XG of 3.63. So if you look at it that way, a successful game for Lloris.
Yeah, he was excellent. And real frustration for him, I'm sure, that the winner was the type of goal that it was. You know, not a particularly great goal to concede. Not from his point of view, of course. Nothing he could have done, but just frustrating goal. Set piece after everything he'd done before that, and for the team to concede a goal like that. But no, I thought it was excellent. A couple of saves of note that we'll touch on. Both to his right. The one that was arguably hitting the post, maybe just creeping in. It's hard to know, but you have to save it, of course. And the speed at which he gets across. What I quite like is in the build-up, if you actually do watch Lloris, the way in which he moves, he's very particular, I'd say, with his movements. Very, very measured, very calm. You know, we talk about other goalkeepers and the style they have, and some are really pumped, aggressive, and you can see they're like a coiled spring, whereas Lloris doesn't look like that. He moves in a very calm way, but when he does explode, the speed at which he gets across, and I spoke to a few people about this, and people that we spoke to who have actually worked with Lloris, it's one of the biggest things they say is the speed that he's got. A conversation I had recently with Brandon Austin of Spurs, of course, and that's the biggest thing he says, is the speed is just unbelievable, and the way in which he got to his right for that one, very good. Good save to his right as well later on. The thing I enjoyed about that save was the parry. Slightly unusual in that he parried it up into the air slightly, but it was the fact that he got it up away from danger. He could have very easily just parried it down to the side, which would have then forced a second save. But the fact that he got it up and away, very intelligent save.
And Zach Steffen making a very good save from Giovanni Lo Celso straight after half time. So important.
Brilliant save. Brilliant save. And I'm watching it and I'm listening to Mr. Neville. And not once did he compliment the save. I think the comment he made was, oh, it seemed to take an age for Zach Steffen to get down. And you're watching the replays thinking, come on, Gary, at this point you can compliment the fact that this has started outside the post, whipped round, going right in the corner. And the way in which he's moved his feet and got down on the half volley to scoop it wide, brilliant save. And not mentioned, nothing mentioned. Unbelievable.
We actually had a tweet in from Ross Kane, who made a good point, said over 1,000 minutes in all appearances, training weekly in one of the world's best environments. Crazy to recall a lot of the chatter about what's this guy doing, signing to be the number two behind Edison. A trophy for Zach Steffen as well. He's had a good season, hasn't he?
Really good. Look, I think that, you know, you consider what this season was going to be, and it's played out pretty much perfectly for him. And I think, you know, obviously American number one, and you look at him in terms of the attributes he's got, the way in which he moves, mentality as well, because look, it's not easy stepping in for these games. A game like that as well, where that save in particular said a lot about him to me, where 0-0, City dominating, City should be winning comfortably. But of course, if that goes in, you wouldn't be surprised if Tottenham managed to hold on and get that 1-0 victory. But that crucial save at a crucial time. And yeah, I'm excited for him. I think the fact that he is in that environment, he's getting the coaching that he's getting, and you look at how it's progressing for him. The big question now is, what is his next step? Because look, Edison's going to be there next season. Be shocked if he wasn't. Does he then stay as a number two, or is it one where City find a way to rotate again, which they do tend to do with goalkeepers that aren't playing, to ensure that he continues to get football? Because I feel, and obviously I mentioned this before, I've kept an eye on him for quite some time now, he's more than good enough to play as a number one regularly in certainly a mid-Premier League team, if not another top Premier League team. Is it one where potentially they loan him out for a season, allow him to go and get that full season's worth of games, or does he stay as a number two?
26 now, I think, 26, 27. So it's not like he's a young, up-and-coming goalkeeper. So I don't know. I mean, what would you do in that situation? It's not like he's playing the odd game. City are getting far in every competition they play in. So he's played a final yesterday. He played a semi-final in the FA Cup the week before. He has made appearances in the Champions League. Yes, Premier League, few and far between, but he's getting, you know, double figures for games.
It's a fair point. And as you mentioned, the message that we had in, it is a great point. And that's where, I guess, if you are at a top four, top six club, one of the Super League elect, then you're going to get a lot of minutes as a number two goalkeeper. But I don't know, I'm saying this, and look, we've got no knowledge that this may happen, but just seeing how City do operate, they had Muric, for instance, as a number two, and they then decided to send him out on loan to get some games. Obviously, it didn't go so well for him when he did go on loan at Nottingham Forest, it's fair to say. And then last season, I'm right in saying it was Bravo, I think it was. So you actually look, they haven't had a consistent number two for quite some time. So I just wonder, going into next season, yes, he will get a good number of games again. And yes, of course, they're very happy with him, I'm sure, stepping in for Edison when needed. But City do have a lot of very good goalkeepers on their books. Of course, we've got Scott Carson as well, who is more than comfortable to play that role if needed. It'll just be interesting. I've just got a feeling, given how City operate, and I like the way in which City have operated so far in regards to that, because goalkeepers who are sat as number two, when they're coming into their prime, like a Zach Steffen, as good as this season has been, and it's been great, if he does the same again next season, is that enough, or does he need a little bit more?
Good to see James Trafford on the Wembley turf as well, after the game. Caught on camera a few times, waving into the crowd, I think.
Yeah, he was. He was, of course, friend of the show, James Trafford. He did actually send me a couple of pictures from his experience yesterday. And look, it's huge for him. One, actually, with Joe Hart, which would have been very nice for him, of course, no doubt a hero of his. But no, look, again, and we talk about, in a similar way, we talk about Zach Steffen. What do they do now with James Trafford? Because this season's been phenomenal for him on a personal level. But certainly you feel like at the age of 18, 19, he now needs to get himself out, get those games. I actually see at the point of recording, and you might not have seen this, but Ben Foster has been linked with a move to Man City this morning in a lot of the major papers, which is a bit random, but you never know. It could be a Ben Foster. But again, that would fit into the idea that they do have this rotation policy behind Edison. And with the thinking being, at some point, Edison will move on. Of course, they've got their collection of clubs around the world. So at some point, if Edison does move on, then it's as good as guaranteed they've got their next goalkeeper within their current structure.
I'm not sure City would stand for the cycling GK stuff, though, would they?
No, it was quite funny watching. I'm going to touch on Watford shortly, of course, but he was getting that camera everywhere, wasn't he?
My word. Absolutely everywhere. We'll get onto that shortly, of course, but now let's move on to Aston Villa 2, West Brom 2. Emi Martinez showing us yet again what he's been doing pretty much all season, and crucial saves too, because Villa did bag the late equaliser.
Yeah, phenomenal, one of them. And do you know what? The frustrating thing is I don't think it will go down as a save, because you actually consider what's happened. It's hit the post, it's coming back across the line, but it's the speed of reactions, the speed of thought, the awareness to somehow get it over the bar. There's nothing else he could have done in that situation to prevent a goal, but he somehow had the awareness in order to get enough of a hand on it. And it must have been so frustrating for the two West Brom lads, like waiting behind for it to drop just to nod it in. Brilliant goalkeeping. And then there was another one in the second half, I believe it was, where again wouldn't go down as a save, but ball coming in, and I use the word awareness to then parry it back out of danger, almost back from where it came from. A really unusual save, but again a really intelligent one.
A couple of good saves from Sam Johnston as well, one from Ahmed El Mohamedi and the other from Ollie Watkins. But the goal that was conceded at the death, what did you make of this one?
I mean, a horrible one for so many reasons. And it's obviously the ball's come in and the defender doesn't really know what to do, because it's in that position where he can't really get foot to it, can't really get head to it. It's coming towards his chest. But ideally, you just want him to get it out of danger. And you can see Sam Johnston doesn't really know whether to come or to stay, hoping his defender will clear it. And of course, the striker nips in and gets enough of a touch on it to take it past him. I mean, look, it's tough. No doubt he's shouting away as the ball's coming in. And the moment he's controlled it in the six-yard box, does then Sam Johnston just come and take everything out? But you're still kind of expecting, and you goalkeepers that are listening in, I know you'll have been there, you're still expecting your defender to deal with it. So he's half then set for a potential shot. And of course, when it comes in, he just doesn't have the time to react. So no, my gut says there's not a great deal he could have done there.
The Friday night game, Arsenal 0, Everton 1, and Bernd Leno conceding late from Richarlison. Kevin Campbell was in the Sky Sports studio. He said, "This is the Keystone Cops. Top goalkeepers don't make that mistake." Graeme Souness added, "It's farcical, embarrassing." Ian Wright called it amateurish and said it was poor, poor, poor goalkeeping. I would say at this juncture, Souness did focus more, to be fair, on Granit Xhaka and the poor defending that allowed Richarlison to get to the position that he got into before passing it to Bernd Leno, really. But your take on the incident?
Bizarre. I mean, look, Granit Xhaka, and of course we don't touch too much on the outfield stuff because there's enough outfield pundits to do that. So we'll allow them to do that. But certainly focusing on Leno, it was just a bizarre technique. You know, when you watch it over and over, this ordinarily would be a scoop. Yeah, he's taken up a decent enough position just outside his near post. You have that small goal, and I'm sure you guys listening in, you'll know what I'm talking about, the small goal, and then you'll turn in. If you can't come for the cross, you would then turn in onto your line and look to make the reaction save. But he hasn't tried to scoop it up. It's almost like he's gone for a long barrier technique, like you would use if you're in a one-on-one and they're a couple of yards away and you're trying to make yourself as big as you can. And by the time he realizes that he can pick it up, he's too late in getting his hands down, never really gets into a position to scoop the ball. It is just a really, really bizarre technique. And as broad as the word concentration is, that's probably what I'd say here. I don't know. He kind of gestures as he gets up as if he was expecting something else to happen in front of him. And there is a guy that sort of semi tries to cut out the cross but doesn't. Whether he's expecting something there and that's changed his decision making and he's lost focus for a second, but it simply looks like he's just lost a bit of focus.
Where do you think Arsenal stand now on their goalkeeping situation? Because Matty Ryan in until the end of the season, right, as a number two, essentially. The backups behind that, Runnison, of course, didn't have the best season this season coming in after Emi Martinez went out. That's the reason they brought Matty Ryan in. Dejan Ilyev didn't have a great season on loan at Shrewsbury, did he? So they've got Bernd Leno there. 29 years old now. He's got a couple of years left on his contract. But recently, actually, in the week leading up to the game, he was interviewed about his contract situation and said, "I'm happy at Arsenal. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe my future will be here. Maybe I'm open to a new adventure." There has been no contract talks yet with Bernd Leno. What do you make on the Arsenal situation?
I mean, I get the impression that they're reasonably happy with him. And I think that since he's come in, you know, he's certainly been one of the better signings in terms of consistency. Something that hasn't helped him is the fact that Emi Martinez did come in last season. the Arsenal fans have seen him move on and do as well as he's done this season. So that has then brought a little bit of extra pressure, I think, onto Bernd Leno. But I'd say on the whole, he's been reasonably consistent. But they do have a decision to make. Obviously, they spent a lot of money on Bernd Leno to be their number one and to be their number one for a period of time. So my guess will be that at some point he will sign a new contract and he will stay as Arsenal number one. But you do feel that they need to bring someone in to offer that little bit more pressure. Now, that might be doing Matty Ryan on a permanent, or potentially, you know, some of the others that have been linked with it. Of course, David Raya was heavily linked last summer. I've heard a few rumours of Tom Heaton and whoever else that might be linked with that particular role. But you do feel that they need to bring someone in on a permanent basis to offer a little bit more of a challenge. But look, I think this is, and again, I won't comment too much on this, but you just get the impression it's more of Arsenal as a football club just needing to get the culture right, where there is that competition for places, where there is that winning mentality within the group, which this season, certainly, you'd have to question whether that's the case.
Just a few more bits from the Premier League to whiz through. Firstly, Liverpool 1, Newcastle 1. Martin Dubravka denying Salah, Firmino and Mane. But nearly being done as well by a rather overzealous back pass from Jonjo Shelvey.
Hilarious, this. I've watched this several times and for the life of me, I cannot think what Jonjo Shelvey's thinking. Absolutely ping the ball back, what, 60 yards, 70 yards to Dubravka. And I feel a bit sorry for Dubravka because he can't bring it down on the full. So when he does finally have a touch and he chests it up and he's then waiting for it to bounce, to volley it away, I just don't know what Jonjo Shelvey's thinking in that moment as to what positive outcome could come from that. And it's funny when they then look at Jonjo Shelvey and he's kind of gesticulating to the sidelines as to it being the right play for whatever reason. But no, I felt a bit sorry for Dubravka on this one because, look, Dubravka's fine with his feet. He's certainly not the world's best, it's fair to say, but he's more than competent. But when you've got a ball fired back at you 60 yards and you've got a striker chasing you down, it's your worst nightmare. But no, in terms of the game itself, I thought that he was very good. The save with his foot in particular, he shows such elasticity. That's the word I'm going to use. You know, we talk about being agile, but he just moves in such a way where he's very graceful and the speed at which he's able to move his limbs. And yeah, I'll use that word again, elasticity. Just looks elastic in the goal.
West Ham 0, Chelsea 1, the 100th top flight meeting between the clubs, Rich. Kind of a double parry pat from Lucas Fabianski on this one. It's just this bit that we're going to pick out from the game because you often don't see that.
No, it's bizarre and it's not meant, of course, but he's gone full stretch to his right and he's got a decent enough hand to it, but it just happens to take it back towards him. And then it's his left hand, which is also coming over, which then parries it again, which actually works in his favour because it takes it slightly away from goal. He's able to get up quick enough, go and close down the angle, and the follow-up is then put wide. But yeah, really bizarre sequence and something you certainly don't see that often.
And lastly, Aaron Ramsdale with that spread to thwart Neil Mopay as Sheffield United beat Brighton. Good result for them, bad result for the Seagulls. And Ian Melier, strong hand to a Marcus Rashford free kick.
Yeah, Aaron Ramsdale, as you touched on, I thought very quick off his line. I say it's almost a classic Ramsdale spread now, but read it very well. The moment that the player was inside the box, so quick and gets into that spread very quickly, very brave as well. Brilliant save. And the Melier one I really enjoyed. And the reason being, ordinarily, I'd say free kick, goalkeeper side, you know my rule of thumb, I think the goalkeeper ordinarily needs to save it. Now, this is a free kick, goalkeeper side. However, the way in which this is struck, this is a classic Marcus Rashford, Ronaldo-esque, ball moving all over the place. The word that I wrote down was Schwazler for the you goalkeepers out there. You'll know what I mean by that. It's going all over the place. And the way in which he's watched it the whole way, it's moving away from him. Big hand, again, shows that dynamic power that he's got. And it is, it's an excellent save. Matthew, that was fun, but now it's time for this.
Yes, it is the Championship rundown, and we are going to start with Norwich, who are back to winning ways, and Tim Krul back to doing what he seemingly does best, saving spot kicks. Incredible. Straight down the middle from Lyndon Dykes, Norwich beating QPR, and that is now three penalty saves from the four that Krul has faced this season.
Do you know what? There's such an aura he has when he's facing a penalty. You look at his presence, he's on the line, he's bouncing around, he's energetic, he's like a little Duracell bunny, that's what I'd say. Not that little though, but yeah, I think that plays a big part because people know Tim Krul for his penalty prowess. So I think if you're stepping up against Tim Krul, you've got that in your head and you look at him on the line and he looks so energetic. I've got no doubt that plays a big part. And it is an excellent save. And of course, the ball then breaks, picks up the rebound. And you could just see how excited he is. And there's so many goalkeepers. Look, I was a bit like this. Like, you know, you play to an extent to have those moments. And you know that a penalty is an opportunity for one of those moments. And that for Tim Krul, that was exactly that. And certainly it looks like they're going to go on and claim the title, you would think. It's been a phenomenal season for them and for him. And as I touched on before, I really think he will retain his position as number one for Norwich in the Premier League once more.
Lovely guy as well, Tim Krul. Comes across as a lovely guy, but you just know in that moment when that striker or that attacker or that penalty taker is stepping up, he is a horrible, horrible human being. He's shouting at them. He's giving them all sorts, isn't he?
It's like you. People on this podcast would think, lovely guy. But the moment we hit that record button and recording has finished, honestly, you just change.
At the other end, not the best return to action for Senny Dieng, letting Xavi Quintilla's strike slip through his fingers. And also, Joe Lumley, not even in the squad. What happened there?
Yeah, bizarre one. Obviously, after the performances, came on against Middlesbrough, a couple of brilliant saves in that one. Great clean sheet last time out. But who knows? Obviously, something must have happened behind the scenes for him not to even be involved. I don't believe there was any injury. But no, for Senny Dieng, the only question I'd ask for Senny Dieng on this one, he's obviously wearing a mask. Now, I'm saying this, and it's going to sound like a blatant excuse. However, I've had this as well. When I broke my cheekbone, I had to train in a mask for a period of time. It's not easy. You can feel it, and you're really aware of it. And it's kind of, for anybody that's worn an American football helmet, that's the analogy I'll give, or the simile. Is it an analogy or simile? You might be able to help me here with the word. What am I looking for?
Crikey, we've gone into a grammar lesson here. I don't actually think it's either. To be fair, it's more of just a similarity.
Similarity. That's the word. Thank you, Matthew. So the similarity that I'll give would be wearing an American football helmet and trying to catch a football. Like, you're really aware and you're having to look through something, it feels. So I'm going to give him a little bit of an excuse, because I do wonder, shot from distance, whether he's fully able to pick it up. The fact that he's wearing this mask, obviously for his broken nose that he got a couple of weeks ago. And what I'd say is that this ball does dip a lot, but it's an odd technique that he ends up using. It's almost like he goes to have the cup technique. The ball then dips on him, goes slightly to his left, and he then tries to move his hands outside the line, never gets enough on it, and it's a horrible one for him because it just squirms over the line. And even then, he still nearly gets to the second ball, and it's just crossed the line. After that, he actually made a couple of very good saves once more, but this is certainly not such a good moment, but certainly for him this season, that's one of very few.
Bournemouth's Asmir Begovic standing his ground to keep Brentford's Ivan Toney at bay, but he just needed that slice of luck for the winner as the Bees defeated the Cherries.
Yeah, he made a great save on the goal down to his right. Nothing he could have done about that. And once again, good save on the one-on-one, as you touched on. Just a big presence, comes out, good distances, makes it tough for Ivan Toney. He says to him, go on, beat me. And in the end was well positioned, got down quickly and made the save.
Jordan Archer, three games on the bounce for Middlesbrough now, helped them to a second successive win against Sheffield Wednesday, and he made a big save from Adam Reach.
Really good save to his left. Yeah, took up a good position as the ball came across, got across quickly, well set. And the technique that he's used to his left, I thought was very, very good, because it's going right in the corner. But no, it's an excellent save, and certainly he's doing himself no harm going into the summer.
Another good save from Coventry's Ben Wilson as he clawed away a deflected Ryan Ledson effort. However, another penalty conceded. Now, we saw this earlier on in the season, didn't we? A fair few that were given against the Sky Blues. It was to be the only goal of the game as Preston ran out 1-0 winners.
Yeah, frustrating one, this one, for him. First and foremost, touch on the save. It was an excellent save again, and certainly for Ben Wilson on the whole, this has been a very, very good season. For Coventry on the whole, it has to be said. Again, you look at a few of the surprise packages in the division, but given that their budget is so, so low, for them to be where they are, and obviously Ben Wilson being a big part of that, surprisingly so, you'd have thought, with Morosi being the outright number one as they came up. Probably them and Barnsley. I think Barnsley are by far the surprise package, it has to be said. But no, the penalty conceded. And again, I'm talking from a goalkeeper's point of view, and it's one of the most difficult things to judge a ball that comes straight like that. So when you're stood in the area and it comes over the defence and it's coming straight towards you, it's very hard to judge the depth and take up your position according to that. So he's taken a really positive stance, and he's been very positive in shouting keepers, because the easy thing to do is shout away here, and that's when you get the moan and groan normally from fans, because they see and they think, oh, why don't you just leave it? It would have gone straight through to the keeper. So he's been very positive, good communication. The defender has left it, but he's just that tiny bit too far advanced, and of course the ball then bounces, he can't quite get it. And by the time he turns round to try and get it, he then takes down the attacker. So it's one that does look bad. Let's not beat around the bush. It doesn't look good at all. However, it is one of the most difficult ones as a goalkeeper to judge that through ball when it's coming dead straight.
And finally, the biggest championship talking point of the weekend, I feel. Firstly, Bradley Collins of Barnsley denying Rotherham's Freddy Ladapo, and then Chidozie Ogbeni on a couple of occasions. He's been pretty good, hasn't he, since reclaiming that number one spot from Jack Walton.
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really good. And the save that I want to touch on, you mentioned it there, was the one from close range. And actually it was the decision, which was very interesting, because as the ball comes in, he's a couple of yards off his line and he's got a choice. Do you go and engage? And you've only got a split second to make this choice. Do you go and engage and spread, which we see quite often? And then how often does it happen where it then just sort of bobbles past you? They get a bit of a connection. And because you're so close to them, there's nothing you can do. And it then bobbles past you into the middle of the goal. He's actually done the opposite here. He's decided to drop onto his line, give himself maximum reaction time. And it was a brilliant reaction save on the line. Really, really good save. So yeah, fantastic for him. And for Barnsley, as we mentioned, or as I mentioned a second ago, for them to be in the playoffs, it is phenomenal. Just unbelievable, given their budget.
And on that, they won the game, of course, Rotherham losing the game. And Victor Johansson, who moments earlier had made a really good save inside 30 seconds, was then adjudged to have not been fouled by Colton Morris. His goal separated the teams, and it could be what condemns the Millers to relegation. You saw Morris himself celebrating half-heartedly, thinking, is that going to be allowed?
He knew it was a foul. He knew it was a foul. This, yeah, just ridiculous. Unbelievable, Jeff. That's what I say about this. Just, and the fact that Stephen Warnock, actually said on Quest, was it? He said that he thought it would have been given 10 years ago, or it was kind of along the lines of, you know, there's no malice. No, there's no malice, but it is the most blatant foul you will see this weekend.
His argument was that players jump with their arms and that Colton Morris had jumped higher, that he'd risen higher than Victor Johansson.
Even if you jump with your arms and you catch someone in the face, an outfield player, it's still a foul. And actually in this case, he's jumped with his arms, and we've got a nice screenshot that I think you'll be putting out on Twitter, my guess is, at some point, providing we're allowed. Are we allowed?
I mean, you're desperate to put this out, so we will put
this
out.
I am, because there was a moment where he's got his arm across and he connects with the arms of Johansson, which, of course, the moment that happens, you've got absolutely no chance of catching it. And the chances are he does catch it if he doesn't connect with his arm. So that in itself is a foul. The fact he then comes through and elbows him in the face just adds insult to injury. And the fact he then goes off to celebrate knowing he's given away the foul and the referee still gives it. And then for Johansson, of course, to be forced off with the injury, it's just a shambles. Absolute shambles, in the words of Matthew Beadle.
Matt Crooks, actually, the Rotherham midfielder, I think he is, tweeted about this, because his red card the week prior for a very similar offence has not been overturned. So he tweeted, if you get a chance, check out Matt Crooks, either on Twitter or Instagram. Really, really good post that he put out. So good stuff there. Best of the rest from the EFL. Actually, before we do that, of course, Watford, talk to me.
Yes, I say we barely touched on that, have we? But credit to them. Of course, they are back in the Premier League. Big credit to Dan Backman, actually, it has to be said, because coming for Ben Foster when he got the injury, and at the time, Watford were in the playoff hunt at the time, it's fair to say. But the run they've had since then, which he's been very solid in, obviously huge credit to the manager that's come in, and hopefully he'll get a bit of time in the Premier League, you'd like to think. So, yeah, well, we'll see. Right. I'd like to think. He's been very good. But no, look, I'm delighted. Of course, ex-club, my local club. And I get the impression that certainly the players they've got, and no doubt what they do this summer, they should be more than equipped to fare well in the Premier League once again. It's quite a turbulent club, of course, it's fair to say. But no, delighted for them, and obviously the guys that I still know at the football club. So a very good weekend.
Intrigued to see what they do in terms of goalkeeping, though, going up into the Premier League. Because, like you say, Dan Backman, will he be given the opportunity to be a number one? Ben Foster, who has one more year left
on his
new contract that he signed at the beginning of this season, I believe. Rob Elliott there as the number three. Plenty of Premier League experience. So you'd think perfect for that number three role once they go up. Will they sign a new keeper? What's going to happen?
It will be interesting. I think it's, as it stands, it is a solid goalkeeping department. It just probably isn't quite in the way that you'd have thought it would have been with Watford getting promoted. You know, certainly Ben Foster, and still very, very highly rated, you would have thought that he would be the number one. But this is where you've got to give credit to Dan Backman, because even when Ben Foster's been fit, and you I've always felt that it's only going to take maybe a minor slip up and maybe they'd put Ben back in, but credit to Backman, that hasn't really come. You know, the one time, maybe the goal against Luton where there was a couple of question marks, but credit to the manager and the staff, they decided to stick with Dan Backman, and the fact that he's kept a couple of clean sheets in the last couple of games as well to get them over the line, it's, yeah, an excellent achievement.
Best of the rest?
Yes, let's do it.
A couple of penalty saves to begin with in League One. Joe Bursic keeping out Jaden Stockley as Peterborough won at Charlton.
Yeah, brilliant. Big game player, Joe Bursic, and I think he's showing it once again. Great penalty save. The fact they've brought him in, we mentioned this in a previous pod. I know Sunderland weren't overly happy that Peterborough had the luxury of bringing in such a top goalkeeper to finish the season, and they are very, very close to promotion now. So, yeah, he's come in, hasn't put a foot wrong.
David Cornell, first start in 24 games at Ipswich, keeping out Joe Piggott in a goalless draw with AFC Wimbledon.
Yeah, really interesting penalty technique he had here. And we were watching this and it looked as if he couldn't be bothered, like as he's facing the penalty, hands on his knees. And actually in some way, I wonder if he was luring them into a false sense of security and then very sharp on the penalty save itself, got himself up for the second ball. Very, very good, good clean sheet.
Couple of comedy moments to finish with in League One. Hull's Matt Ingram. Bizarrely blasting the ball at Lincoln Loney, Callum Morton. They nearly scored through Brennan Johnson with this as a result. He then went bonkers at the referee, but it didn't go in. They won the game and they're back up in the championship.
They are indeed. Yeah, huge well done to them as well. And Barry Richardson, the goalkeeper coach of Hull. In fact, we should give a little shout out to the various goalkeeper coaches because, again, they go through it as much as anybody else. So certainly for Barry Richardson at Hull and knowing what Hull went through last season when they did get relegated, to come back at the first time of asking, you wouldn't have predicted that at the end of last season. So credit to them. And of course, Ingram's been very good. We disagree slightly on this moment, actually, because you're saying the fact the player's outside the area, this isn't a foul, whereas I'm saying it is. He stood a yard away from Matt Ingram. And so Matt Ingram's made a bit of a point of it, almost just kicked it at him, saying, look, I know the referee's going to give me a foul here, but he doesn't.
Yes, and I quite like the fact that the referee didn't give the foul.
Interesting.
Because he turned around and said, there you go. That didn't work out for you, did it? I understand if it was a classic Thierry Henry, George Best, you know, flick it from the goalkeeper's hands as he releases it, but it wasn't. Callum Morton, I get what you're saying, but Callum Morton was outside the area, which by the letter of the law is where he is. If it's in the laws of the game, and I could be wrong here, that players have to be 5 to 10 yards away from the goalkeeper if the goalkeeper is standing right on the edge of the box, fair enough. But I don't think it is. Mm. It was Matt Ingram's decision to advance all the way to the edge of the box before he released his dropkick. Mm. Well, it's not Callum Morton's fault.
And this leads us on nicely to our weekly poll, which will go out later on Twitter. Is this a foul? Yes or no? I am saying yes, 100% it's a foul. Matt Beadle is saying no. We will let the listeners decide.
Okay, to the Stadium of Light, where Luke O'Nine and Lee Burge found themselves in a bit of a tiz in a whirlwind contest between Sunderland and Accrington.
Yeah, so this is one that, again, it's so tough without being there or being able to hear the communication. Because normally, and for those that haven't seen it, long through ball, Lee Burge, if the ball's left, then it will go through safely to Lee Burge. But it's headed back towards him. He's wildly out of position. Wildly. I thought that was quite a good descriptive word. He's hugely out of position. I don't know which I prefer, actually. Should I go wildly or hugely? Anyway, he is out of position. And then what that means, of course, the header then trickles back towards goal. He sprints back and actually credit to him in that he gets there. And I think that if he actually gets a little bit more angle on the ball, he can keep this out. But in the end, he's only able to scoop it into the corner of the goal. Now, the reason I say this is a difficult one to pass judgment on is that if we're there, we'd be able to hear the communication. If he screamed head home or if he screamed keepers, I think he would have screamed keepers, then really your defence does need to leave it to you unless the defender hasn't heard it. So this is all very much down to communication, and without knowing what was said, it's hard to pass judgment.
Yep, showing that great goalkeeper pace that we spoke about last time on the pod.
This is it. This is it.
Into League Two, just a few to touch on. Shamal George has returned for Colchester with 2 wins in 2, or he had returned, I should say. They lost at Cheltenham, but he did make a good save from Sam Smith.
Yeah, brilliant save to his right. Showed real pace to get across the goal. Good spring. Managed to get a good hand to it. Very good save.
Joel Dixon of Barrow with fingertips onto the bar from Tranmere's Paul Lewis. Also, not quite enough as the home side nabbed a late winner through the old veteran David Nugent.
Indeed, a couple of good saves in this one. One mid-height to his right from, I think it was from a header from memory, but again, very sharp to his right. And the one onto the bar, I'm going to take your word for it that he did get a touch. And if he did, then it's a great reaction, great fingertip up onto the bar. Very good save.
And here he is again, the ubiquitous Aidan Stone, conceding a penalty by bringing down Salford's Ian Henderson, but duly saving a penalty from Salford's Ian Henderson.
Great word, that ubiquitous. What does that mean?
Just means that you're pretty much here, there and everywhere.
Okay.
A lot.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I'm going to use that word today.
Yeah.
Ubiquitous. Yeah. I like it. But really good penalty save. Really good penalty save. The fact he gave away the penalty, it's one of those tough situations where he's probably in two minds as to what to do and ends up bundling him over. Bit of a difficult one, but certainly the penalty save was very good.
Kind of a word podcast, isn't
it? It has been, hasn't it? Yeah. It has been. Yeah, I feel like you're teaching me. I feel spending time with you is increasing me as a human being. That's probably not the right word to use there. So actually, it's not working overly well. The grammatical skills that you have are not being passed on to me in quite the way that I wish they were. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, it's that time now. I may be part of the Smug Club, the club where we get everything right. But it has to be said, it does not compare to the following club, the club that everybody wishes they were part of. And that, of course, is the Clean Sheet Club. We start in the Premier League. Jordan Pickford, 4-7, either side of injury. Edward Mendy, first since mid-March. Aaron Ramsdale, third of an ever-present season. Nick Pope, back in for a spring clean. Ilian Melier, first in five. Dean Henderson, one less, first in four. David Raya, 1, 2, 3, 4, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, clean to the clock. On his way to the top, Ray got it locked from bees to the locker. Bradley Collins, happy to boast his best ever clean sheet return in all comps. Dan Everson, 4-5. Dan Backman, 5-7. Craig McGivalray, back to winning ways and back to keeping it clean. Harry Burgoyne, back in the team and back to keeping it even cleaner. Alex Cairns, take another big gulp, 7-11. David Cornell, straight out of the Ivy League with sparkling supremacy. Nick Zanev, a fabulously fruitful 4 from the Fojo fella. Andrew Fisher, 3 in a row. Jamie Cumming, 1st in 5. Josh Griffiths, 5-7. Glenn Morris, double the age, but exactly the same. Luke McGee, 2 on the bounce. Matt Jilks, ditto on the double. Vaclav Hladký, 3-easy peasy. Jack Rose, 50-50, since reclaiming the number one jersey, 3-6. And finally, Joe Murphy, 4-5 for Papa Murph.
That was brilliant. Well read, Richard. Well read. The what fella? Nick Zanev? The Fojo fella.
Fojo? Go on.
Fojoa.
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 Does that mean?
It's a fruit. It's a fruit that is native to South America, I believe, but has been grown in New Zealand for quite a long time, since the early 1900s. So they've kind of made it their own.
Okay, well, look, again, you are... I don't think increasing me is the right word, is it? But I feel like I'm growing. There you go, growth.
Did you recognise the song as well?
No.
For David Raya. The 1, 2, 3, 4, uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Okay, no.
No, Pitbull.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, we're going to play a little bit of that.
Right, the table.
Yes.
The table. It is getting very, very interesting as we approach the final few games of the season, because two clean sheets in a week, I believe, have taken Mr. Josh Griffiths to the top of the pile. 21 clean sheets now in 41 games. Second spot, Freddie Woodman and Vaclav Hladký, both on 20. Freddie in 43. Vaclav also in 43. And then we have three players on 18. Lee Burge, Chris Maxwell and Lawrence Vigouroux. Burge on 38, Maxwell on 40, Viggs on 44. So, looks like it's going to go to the wire with the top three there. Josh Griffiths, Freddie Woodman and Vaclav Hladký.
Absolutely. Big couple of weeks coming up.
And to finish, we are going to quickly do one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper.
Yes, it is the Scottish Cup quarterfinals. It is Xander Clark of St Johnstone. It is injury time in extra time, and it is unbelievable scenes.
It doesn't get any better than this for a goalkeeper. Doesn't get any better. You come up in the last minute at Ibrox for a corner. You stand in the six-yard box and nobody picks you up. The ball gets whipped in on your head. You head it towards goal. You get the equaliser. And then in the penalty shootout, you're the hero in that as well. I think whatever happens, or whatever's happened prior to this, whatever happens after this, there is a great chance that this is the moment that he will talk about for the rest. This is the kind of moment that will get him on various shows and other publications and other bits and pieces. Just an amazing moment for a goalkeeper to experience.
Sadly, wasn't his goal. Chris Kane was the actual goal scorer. He tweeted after the game, Xander Clark, and said, "Anybody got the goals panel's number? Asking for a friend." Fair play to him. But yeah, a great moment. Wonderful stuff. And nobody picked him up in the box. Why was nobody marking him?
Yeah. And the technique on the header, let's be honest, it wasn't brilliant. Probably should have hit the target from where he was. But no, the fact he was up there, got a decent enough header on it. And then the penalty saves were excellent as well. We have to touch on them. I thought they were brilliant. A couple of very, very good penalty saves. Just a fantastic moment for St Johnstone to beat Rangers, of course, as well. Huge for the football club. No, delighted for him.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
You can have a little break again, okay? Because we're going to finish with a Carabao Cup winner in Zach Steffen today.
Ah, brilliant.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.